when you play an instrument and you try to perform at a high level, you put everything you have into it. And that was the course of my life. It's what I wanted to do. That was my dreams, my goals, my ambitions. So to consider something different required a change of perspective.
You very quickly have to find a meaning and a purpose and a mission, maybe, beyond just me and what I can do.
Once you kind of, like I said, look at yourself, kind of value yourself as the person that you are, the attributes that I wanted to instill in myself and cultivate in myself, I could apply to whatever I chose. What truly makes something special, I think, and truly makes something worth doing is how you're able to affect other people's lives.
If you could do things differently with a fresh set of chops, what would you do differently?
My stage is just a small microcosm of this grand stage that God has planned. And all I have to do is plow my row and do my part. And as long as I'm doing that, then I'm happy.
It's the story of the trumpet in the words of those who play it. Young, old, professional, amateur. You never miss a day of practice, or perhaps you're coming back to rediscover the joy you once knew playing your horn. For those who love and are fascinated with this crazy mass of metal tubing that no one can seem to master, or is at least wise enough to not admit it if they have, this show covers all of the trumpet dynamics. Well, everybody, welcome to the show. This is James Newcomb, and I am thrilled to bring on to the podcast today Beth Perutka. Beth and I met, I guess it was about 12 years ago on Facebook, and kind of a funny story is that I recognized the name Perutka because, and I'm kind of giving away my political leanings here, because the fellow that I voted for president in 2004, his name was Michael Perutka. And he was running with the very, very tiny, little-known party called the Constitution Party. So I saw the name Perutka, and I thought, well, there has to be a relation, because how many Perutkas can there be in this country? And it turns out that, yes, Michael Perutka is the father of Elizabeth Perutka, who we have on the call today. And I said, yes, I voted for your father 5 years ago. And she said, oh, that was you. Little joke, because it's such a little-known party. But anyway, Beth was just killing it on the trumpet. I think she was probably undergrad at the time. I followed her and just kept up with her work, going through her master's program, and then she began her doctorate program. And then she became injured, and we're going to hear about the story about how she became injured with her trumpet playing, but she talked about taking lemons and making lemonade out of it. She went on a path of discovering what is the cause of this injury that I've suffered, that I can't play my trumpet to the level, the very high level that I once did, and it led her down to the path where she is today, which was basically going into pre-medical school, because she had to discontinue her studies as a doctorate. So she was in pre-medical school, and I just realized that, you know, my calling in life is to be a personal trainer, and that's where she is right now. And I'm telling you what, you know, it just following Beth on Facebook just fires me up to see all of the knowledge that she's sharing, and some of it that I can relate to, because some of the podcast clients that I have are in the health and fitness industry. So I try to keep up with her, and it's I know some of the terminology that she's using it, but let's just say that she knows her stuff. And here she is. She's going to share her story of recovering from injury and becoming who she is today, which is something very, very special. So Beth, welcome to the show.
Thank you, James. Thank you so much for your kind words. It's an honor and pleasure to be here with you.
Well, I am thrilled to have you on the show, because you and I were like following each other for kind of associates on Facebook.
Yes.
Yeah. You're not really friends until Mark Zuckerberg says you're friends, right? So we're like kind of sort of staying in touch a little bit, just kind of just commenting, liking here and there. But you and I didn't actually speak in person until about a week ago. And this is
That's
after
right.
12 years of being, quote, friends on Facebook. And so here we are. So
yeah, long time coming.
Yeah. So I just want to, I always ask every guest of the show, like, what got you interested in trumpet in the first place?
You know, I kind of had a late start in trumpet compared to most people, I think. I actually didn't start playing until right before my freshman year of high school.
Okay.
And actually, I was homeschooled for that year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually part of my parents' music curriculum. They said, okay, you got to pick up an instrument to play.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be honest. I chose trumpet because it looked easy. Had three valves, three buttons, looked easy. And I came to realize real fast it was not that way.
Yes.
But I really enjoyed it. I picked it up pretty quickly and had my first band experience as a sophomore in high school.
Wow.
Yeah. It was my first time sitting in band. And actually, I remember very vividly the music being passed out on the stand. I think it was pep band music for the first time. And I remember looking at it and thinking to myself, well, assuredly, the band director is going to play a recording of how this goes, because there's absolutely no way that you can expect me to play this based upon what you passed out, because I didn't know how to read music.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And, you know, I learned real fast that that's not how it worked. But I think, you know, growing up, my dad played guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, you know, doesn't have any formal music education, but he played really well by ear. And I think just growing up with that, being around that all the time, he played all the time, every day, every night, I think I developed a really good ear, musical
right.
ear.
Yes.
And I was able to pick up things really quickly. And I really enjoyed it. So by my junior year, I made Allstate, was the first student from my high school to do so. By my senior year, I made Allstate Jazz. So I picked it up really quickly.
Wow.
Yeah. And decided, you know, a lot of the people that I was around, you know, being in the kind of the Washington, D.C. area, Annapolis,
mm-hmm.
were military band.
Yes.
And a lot of those folks had graduated from the University of North Texas.
Okay.
So that was like, that became my dream school. And so I applied there and went down there, had a great 4 years studying with Professor John Holt, then went on for my master's at mm-hmm. Baylor University with Rudd, and then took a short time off where I taught in the public school system, gigged, played a little bit with the Dallas Opera, and then went back for my doctorate at the University of North Texas again with John Holt as a teaching fellow. And that was where I had my injury in my first year. So I have my residency done for my doctorate at University of North Texas, but the injury kind of stirred me in a different direction.
What was it like to be a freshman, like ninth grade, you pick up the trumpet? You had to have some pretty intensive getting your chops in shape so that you could play at the level that required of the 10th graders who've been playing probably 4 or 5 years already.
Yeah, you know, I think I just played a lot. Looking back on it, I took private lessons. Greg Reese was my private trumpet instructor. He was former member of the Jazz Ambassadors. You know, I just really enjoyed it. I was that kind of kid who, you know, would go to the movies and kind of get lost in the soundtrack and lose track of the plot of the movie because I was listening to the music. So I always enjoyed it. I was always, you know, getting yelled at by my brothers because I was playing, you know, making too much noise. But I played a lot. So I think by the time I got the sophomore level in band, I was already above everybody else just because I played so much and played by ear.
You just had a work ethic of, I like this and I'm just going to do it.
I guess so. You know, when you like something like that, you just do it. It doesn't feel like work.
When you're making plans to go to college at North Texas, Baylor, and again, North Texas for your doctorate, what role is music in your life at this point? Is this something that was just, I'm Beth and I'm a trumpet player? I'm just curious as to what you saw music being as far as your contributions to the world, if that makes any sense.
I think I kind of evolved and matured over time mm-hmm. with that. I think I definitely made, I'm not going to say it's the mistake, because I feel like everybody kind of has to go through it where you kind of identify yourself with your instrument,
mm-hmm.
Identify yourself very strongly with what you do.
Right.
I feel like that's when you're really passionate about something, when you really care. So if you're honest with yourself, you kind of do that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I think that as I matured and kind of grew up through it, I started to kind of separate myself more, like instead of becoming like Beth is a trumpet player, I was Beth is a person who plays trumpet. So to speak.
Yeah.
So I was a person first with all the values, like the dedication and the consistency and the hard work ethic and the honesty, integrity that I tried to instill in myself, that was part of my person. And, you know, I could apply that to whatever I wanted to apply it to. It could be trumpet. It could be medicine. It could be being a personal trainer. So I think that that was a progression for me over time, just to kind of separate myself a little bit from the instrument and the art itself and realize that I was the person who had something to offer, not the instrument.
Right. So when all cylinders are firing, you're like in your, let's just say you're in your master's program and you're just like, you feel unstoppable because you're young, because young people feel unstoppable.
Sure.
And where did you see yourself as a musician? Did you have like a dream gig that you were kind of in the back of your mind, this is what I want to do?
Yeah, I think just because, like I said before, growing up around all the military band people in Washington, D.C., that's what I wanted. I wanted to be in a military band.
Which one?
Any of them. I have a lot of friends in the Pershings. I think that would have probably been my dream gig, but orchestra as well. I took a lot of orchestra auditions.
So kind of the classical side of things.
Yes, more the classical side of things.
But you were pretty strong in jazz, because I know that, what I remember, you had some pretty solid high chops, didn't you?
Well, that's another kind of part of my story. I always, always struggled with my range.
Really?
Until at the very end of my master's program at Baylor University. And actually was working with my husband, Eric, who mm-hmm. He himself has pretty extraordinary range on the trombone. And he's also a tenor as well. So he has that singing background, which he has really applied to his instrument. But kind of working with him, I developed kind of this extreme upper register and recorded it maybe about a year before I stopped playing. We produced a CD called I Love Being Here With You. And I had kind of a lot of fun using that upper register, which, like I said, had always been obscure to me. I couldn't figure it out. And then, you know, I recorded Wayne Bergeron's O Holy Night with a double D and all that. It was so much fun.
Oh, holy night, the stars are brightly shining. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin and error pining, till he appeared and the soul felt its worth. A thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn.
Well, enough pleasant stuff. We have to talk about the unpleasant stuff now.
Sure.
Take us to the moment where, all is not well in paradise. Something is not right with my body. What's going on?
Yeah. So it happened, like I said, during the first year of my doctorate, and I was doing a lot of playing. So a lot more playing than I had been doing previously. I was a teaching fellow, so I had probably between 15 and 20 students. And I'm the kind of person who likes to play in my lessons. So I was constantly playing with them. I was in the Wind Symphony, in the Symphony Orchestra, and we were preparing for the National Trumpet Competition. So I was in those groups. I was in Baroque Orchestra. So I was in a lot of different playing situations. And towards the end, it was a progressive thing. I started feeling this kind of shooting pain up the side of my nose on the right side, originating where my mouthpiece sits on my upper lip.
Okay.
And, you know, it would come and go, and I didn't really think too much of it because it would disappear. But then it got to the point where it started to bruise. And there was one playing situation in particular. We were sight reading in Wind Symphony, and I remember feeling that this lightning bolt shoot right up my nose, and then it went under my right eye.
Wow.
And after that incident, my upper lip swelled. I had a big white line form, and I still have a picture of it because I snapped a picture of myself. That's when I knew, you know, I got to figure this out. Something's not right. And it got to the point where it was just too painful to play. I played on one of my friend's senior recitals, and that was the last time I really played. And I'd had to just grin and bear it through that. That was not a lot of fun.
Mm.
But so I went in my search to try to figure it out. I traveled to New York, worked a little bit with Jan Kagreis for a week. And I went to Chicago, even did some Alexander technique training for a week, just trying anything. Got MRIs done, saw a number of different neurologists and dentists. And to be honest with you, we never really quite pinpointed exactly what it was. Very likely trigeminal nerve injury. What's kind of good about it is it doesn't affect me unless I'm actually playing the trumpet. I don't have any pain in my face. It's only when I'm playing, and to be honest with you, it's really only when I'm playing in the mid to low register of the instrument. The upper register, I could still kind of play.
Yeah.
So it's really those kind of lower vibrations that kind of trigger the nerve.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to pick up a horn today and, like, let's just say a low G, not the super low G, but the G above that.
Yes.
I guess, what do you call it? A middle G?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a trumpet player. What do I know?
I know exactly which G you're talking about.
Yes. Yes. So does everybody else listening. So if you were to play like that note, you would feel it? Or would it be painful?
If I played it for too long, yes.
How long is too long?
It really depends. I can kind of feel it coming sometimes. Well, like for example, like even if I stand in the shower and have like, you know, the shower, like a stream of water hitting my upper lip, if I stand there too long, I can start to feel that triggered as well. It's not something I can exactly pinpoint. Like I said, I can kind of feel it coming. And I was like, better stop. Otherwise, I'm going to get that sharp pain.
Wow.
But it really
just
doesn't.
Standing in the shower.
Yeah, it doesn't take too much.
Obviously, trumpet is would be not good to if it, just a stream of water in the shower would trigger it. Yeah, obviously, trumpet is out of the question, unfortunately. Now, I'm just kind of curious, like looking back, you have to have thought about what could I have done differently?
Mm.
Just looking back, it's not like you can change anything. It's not like you made any mistakes. You didn't do the wrong thing.
Yeah.
But if you could do things differently with a fresh set of chops, what would you do differently?
I would probably, to be honest with you, not be so hard-headed and try to do everything. I would have not succumbed to some of the pressures that I felt to do too much too soon. And I would have taken the time that I needed to kind of figure maybe some imbalances in my own playing out. It's, you know, it's one of those things that you see, like, well, in the profession that I'm in now, just overuse injuries. Like if I was a triathlete and I was running marathons, you know, you do the same thing over and over again and you don't balance yourself out, eventually you're probably going to run into an overuse injury. I'm not exactly sure because like I said, we didn't pinpoint exactly what it was, but my best guess is that's what I did. It was an overuse injury, just too much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because I heard you saying that you picked it up at ninth grade and by the time you're in the 10th grade, you're playing at you're probably outperforming your peers. And it's not like I'm an expert in this, but I would guess that it was just a little bit, maybe a little too much right out the gate.
Yeah. And I'm, you know, and my personality is the type that when I like something, I go for it. So that's one thing that I know about myself now that I just, you know, have to rein it back a little bit. Can't always go 100%.
I appreciate that you're sharing this because I know this is probably not your favorite topic in the world. And we hope that that this is going to be helpful for someone who's maybe going through something similar with what Beth experienced back in the day. But what was it like when you realized, I can't play trumpet anymore? This isn't going to be my career.
It was really difficult. I would say I probably went through a stage of some sort of depression, probably for about 6 months to a year trying to figure it out. Because when you put your, I mean, everybody listening to this podcast knows that when you play an instrument and you try to perform at a high level, you put everything you have into it. And that was the course of my life. It's what I wanted to do. That was my dreams, my goals, my ambitions. So to consider something different required a change of perspective. And that took time to figure out. But what happened for me was I started getting interested in, through all this, I kind of through my master's, I was starting to be interested in nutrition, not so much fitness, but nutrition. And while I was injured, I actually went to a retreat in Arizona, and it was the Engine 2 7-day rescue retreat.
Okay, yeah.
And that's a whole food plant-based retreat. It was actually sponsored by Whole Foods Market. And I went out there because I really appreciated these people and I liked what they stood for. And I met and I had a little conference with somebody who I really admired at the time, Dr. Caldwell Estelson. He wrote the book Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease. And I told him my story. Hmm. And I just sat with him and I said, you know, can I just ask you, you know, as somebody who I really admire, what's your advice for me? And he actually said, well, what do you think about medical school? And I had thought about it, to be honest with you, but I'm older at this point and had already had this whole career as a musician. I thought, well, you know, medical school is a long process and, yeah, you know, and right. Do I really have what it takes to do something like that? And that comment actually just, it kind of gave me that courage to really consider it. And I came home from that really inspired and started going down that path. I started putting my foot in just to kind of see how I responded to taking those classes. And I started taking pre-med classes. I started taking chemistry and organic chemistry and biochemistry and biology and anatomy and physiology and physics. And I really started to like it. I enjoyed the learning process. To kind of continue that story, at the same time I was doing that, I was also getting into fitness. And I was training with a personal trainer named Chris Ibanez, who actually trained out of his garage. He was recommended to me by a friend. I was experiencing some back pain, and he really helped me get out of that back pain and become stronger. And I just felt so good working with him. I felt so good working with him. I drove, it was more than an hour each way, 3 days a week, just to go work with this guy out of his garage. So through this whole process, I was learning about fitness and at the same time as learning about medicine.
Would you say that when you're taking this deep dive into biomechanics and health and fitness and whatnot, nutrition, were you investigating what happened with my lip and that kind of led into that? Or is it just kind of separate? It just kind of gave you a release, something else to focus on other than woe is me because I can't play trumpet anymore?
I think both of those statements are true. I think there's definitely a part of me. Actually, when the injury happened, I was talking a lot with Bobby Shue, and he was very much encouraging me to look at medical resources, look at medical documents, see if I could find other people who had experienced the type of injury that I was experiencing. He actually told me to go buy Grey's Anatomy. And I remember picking it up at the store and just like looking at it, utterly confused. And I don't know if you've ever opened Grey's Anatomy before, but it's pretty intimidating.
No, I haven't. I've seen the show. But
yeah, right. But so I think there was definitely an aspect of me trying to figure out my injury. But at the same time, I just started to love it for the sake of loving it. It was very relatable to me, to the people that I loved, cared about, to the different passions that I had with nutrition and fitness. And it just kind of all started to come together.
That's awesome. You know, I keep thinking about hearing your story. I see sometimes on Facebook or Twitter or something, I'll see that picture of what we imagine success being, and it's just this straight line. Like point A to point B, that's what success is. And then reality is, it's just, you know, it's just scribbled. I don't know if you've seen this or not, but
yes,
it's just like the scribbled. You go through all these pitfalls up the mountains and then backwards and forwards, and it's just, and then you finally get to that. So it sounds to me like this is very, very applicable to your career path thus far.
Absolutely. And another little phrase that I like is fail forward.
Fail forward. So, that's a good one. I've heard that before.
Yeah, you have to fail in order to move forward. So I've definitely had my share of failures, but it's definitely propelled me forward, and I'm grateful for each and every one of them.
Well, this fellow that you're talking about that you were training with, he's now your business partner. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, yes, in a way.
In a way.
So yeah. So I've, since becoming a personal trainer, I've had my own business here in Huntsville for about 4 months. Like I said, I was working with Chris, who was working out of his garage, and I modeled my business based upon that, especially during coronavirus when all the gyms were shut down. I opened up my own garage gym, and it was a really fun process. Eric helped me. I got a lot of high-end medical grade equipment, actually, medically certified equipment like the power plate and the Kinesis, and I have an Eccentrics, and I got AstroTurf in there, and we really had fun putting it together. So I split my time 3 days a week. I'm up here in Huntsville training out of my garage. And then the other 3 to 4 days a week, I'm down at Chris's gym in Tomball, Texas, called the Fit Type Strength and Performance. And I have a bunch of clients down there as well. So I split my time between the two places. I'm a private contractor down there, and it's I love that community of people. I wouldn't drive an hour and a half both ways for any other place. So
yeah, that's great.
They're fantastic.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, what's the process of becoming a personal trainer? Do you have to go through a course or become certified?
Yes.
By a board of some kind, or how does that work?
Yeah, so there's different certifications you can get. The one that I got was PTA Global. That's a certification that I went through. Right now, I'm also working on my CSCS, which is a Certified Strength and Conditioning Specialist. So that's kind of like the certificate that people get who want to really work with high-end athletes, maybe at the college level. It's just a kind of like the next step. It's what all like exercise science majors have to take at the end of their degree program to really be certified. And that is, so I'm kind of skipping the exercise science undergrad and just taking the test. So that's kind of my next step. I'll be taking that in a couple of weeks.
Well, I mean, it sounds to me like, you know, you had this work ethic that you applied on the trumpet. And be it what it may, maybe you just overdid it a little bit. And for whatever reason, that didn't work out. But it sounds to me like you're just taking that same work ethic, that same love of learning and knowledge. And, you know, musicians who do it longer than a few years, who get out in the real world, out of college, they find out really quickly, I have to have a real sense of purpose with what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if you don't have that, you're going to be burned out very quickly. Because if it's just about, look what I can do and look at my ego, look how fast I can play, it's not going to last you very long. You very quickly have to find a meaning and a purpose and a mission, maybe beyond just me and what I can do. And it sounds to me like you have found that. Maybe ultimately you would have found with music if it would worked out that you were able to do that, but you're just doing it with something other than music.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I'm extremely grateful that God has given me that perspective. It was very difficult to make the switch, but once you kind of, like I said, look at yourself, kind of value yourself as the person that you are. So the attributes that I wanted to instill in myself and cultivate in myself, I could apply to whatever I chose. And what truly makes something special, I think, and truly make something worth doing is how you're able to affect other people's lives. And this is right now, this for me has been one of the best ways that I could think of to affect people's lives. It's been absolutely the most rewarding experience in just 4 months that I've ever had. So I'm truly grateful for that.
What are some of your favorite memories from your playing days?
I think the community of people. I love the communication that you can have in music. I loved the National Trumpet Competition ensembles that I was involved with.
Yes.
So I had the opportunity to be, especially at Baylor University, I was involved with a couple of groups that won first place and one that won third place in the ensemble division in particular. And that was just a very thrilling experience, just because you're part of a team. It's not just you up on the stage. The interaction that you play with each other, it's creative. You're improvising on stage with each other musically. I miss that. I miss that kind of communication through music.
Well, it's a tight-knit community, trumpet players.
Yep, absolutely.
You have to be, because not everybody can be a trumpet player, so we got to stick together.
That's right.
Beth, I want to talk a little bit about, obviously, you have an above-average knowledge of health and fitness and biomechanics and nutrition and whatnot. And I was wondering, do you have any words of wisdom that trumpet players can take, or musicians in general, can take away from this podcast and say, you know, maybe I'm not as conscious of this, or maybe I'm not as solid on this part of my health as I should be. Maybe that's keeping me from performing at my best. I was wondering if you just have some words of wisdom for us.
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to. So one of the things that I see, I have maybe about 5 or 6 of my clients right now are musicians. To be honest with you, what I'm going to say is actually applicable to almost everybody, not just musicians. But, you know, a lot of times we live in this state of constant flexion. So, you know, we're on our phones, we're working at our desk, we're on our computers. As musicians, as a trumpet player, you know, I was always holding my instrument in front of me, my shoulders kind of rounded forward.
I'm sorry to interrupt,
yeah, sure.
But what does flexion mean?
Flexion. So like
Flexion. F-L-E-X-I-O-N?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Okay.
So just everything is kind of like anterior focused. The front of me is engaged, less of the back of me. So really that leads to kind of like a posterior chain. So everything on the back side of your body. So starting from the top, like your rhomboids, your lats, your erector spinae, your glutes, your hamstrings, your calves, your soleus, the muscles of the feet, all the backside of the body is traditionally a lot weaker than the front side of the body. And what this does is kind of like, you know, at least for me, I remember as a trumpet player, my shoulders were almost constantly rounded forward. And I see this a lot with people. You also see, like, if you have any sort of like low back pain or knee pain, usually that can be traced back to an imbalance in the backside of the body somewhere. So it's like, for example, it's very common for people to be quad dominant, which means that their hamstrings aren't as strong. So the backside of their leg isn't as strong as the front side of their leg. And for a lot of people, that can be quite extreme. And if you think about it, a lot of times that can lead to knee pain because, you know, the body is going to be good at adapting. And if you're not engaging your hamstrings, eventually your body's not going to put energy where it's not needed, where it's not being used, and those muscles are going to atrophy. So, you know, if your quads are overworking and your hamstrings are underworking, they're not going to stabilize the knee like they should, and your knee, your joints, the ligaments are going to take more abuse. So as an example, that can also be, you know, applied to the shoulder. A lot of people have shoulder pain, but strengthening the muscles of the backside of the body, I would highly recommend. That was something that really helped me, learning how to hip hinge.
What's that?
So learning how to extend your pelvis backwards. So rather, a lot of times, if you're doing a lower body exercise and you feel everything in your quads, in your thighs, that's a really big sign that you're quad dominant and you're not using your posterior chain like you should. So if I'm bending down and doing a deadlift, or I'm squatting and picking something up, or I'm doing a glute bridge, I should be able to feel, you know, my hamstrings and my glutes working. If I feel at all in my quads, which is very common, that was me, then you really kind of want to work on that back chain, that posterior chain.
How do you focus on the back more than the front?
Well, I would recommend getting somebody like a certified strength and conditioning specialist to help you, but it's kind of a neuromuscular thing. At first, you have to be able to feel those muscles. Like I didn't know how to connect to, I didn't know what it was like to use my glutes, to use my hamstrings. I just had no idea until, you know, I went through a certain routine, started doing a lot of glute bridges, just really making that mind muscle connection. Then you can progress. Then you can start to strengthen and build from there.
Huh. So I guess the first step is to be aware.
Yes.
Of if you like lift something heavy, like a sandbag, for example, and you feel it all in the front and you don't feel it in the back, then that's a sign that you're maybe front dominant.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're doing a certain lifting motion and you feel everything in your quads, then yes. In fact, it's funny what you just said. I asked one of my clients who's a saxophone player last night what she thought was one of the best things that she was getting out of personal training as a musician. And she said, just what you said, is that muscle awareness is when she's, because she's a Barry sax player, and those instruments can be pretty heavy. Those cases can be pretty heavy.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
They're wearing those straps around their necks. It's a lot of weight. And she said, you know, she was experiencing back pain before. And now that she knows how to engage her lats, now she knows how to feel those muscles in her back and to use them. She has much less back pain than she's ever had in her entire life. So I think that is really important. That's the first step, is to have that muscle awareness.
Right. I just have to clarify for people listening and for me, lats are what now?
Oh, latissimus dorsi. They're the big muscles in your back. So they, yeah, they're like, they're the biggest muscles in your back.
In like the lower back part.
Lower, and they kind of connect up and around to the front part of your shoulder.
Okay, and then glutes and hamstrings are the same thing?
Glutes are your butt.
Oh, the gluteus. Okay, got it.
Yep, there's three parts. It's the glute minimus, glute medius, and glute maximus. That's all your butt. And then your hamstrings are the back side of your legs.
Butt.
I did say butt. and then you have your hamstrings, which are the back side of your legs.
All right. Mm-hmm. So hamstrings, glutes / butt, and then lats.
Latissimus dorsi.
Latissimus dorsi.
Dang Latin.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, why can't they just speak English?
I know.
It's the first language after all. Okay, so let's talk about can we make it more trumpet centric? What are some physical issues that that trumpet players may be doing, or habits that they may have that are more that are causing this front imbalance? What can they do? What can we do?
So a lot of times, like I said, a lot of times very common for trumpet players to have the rounded shoulders. So that's just because of how we play. We're holding the instrument up there all the time. So working on the posterior delts, which is the area behind your shoulder. So you have the muscle group behind your shoulder. So face pulls, things that kind of strengthen the back part of your shoulders and your upper back.
So what's a face pull?
So if you can imagine a cable machine at the gym, so you just you would just take like a machine and pull a rope to your face. It's kind of a little bit difficult to explain, but really what it does is target the back of your shoulders so that instead of having like that rounded flexion, you're kind of working on those back muscles to kind of pull everything back to where they should be.
So front balance, front and back balance. If you didn't get all of that, get this. Just stand straight, have good posture, and do face pulls.
Well, you know, and working on your strength. Strength really helps a lot of things. So you get strong, a lot of stuff figures itself out. That's what I found.
And strength training on all of the body, not just your arms or just your front of your legs.
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay. Got it. So balance. Mm-hmm. Balance is everything in life, not just playing trumpet, but it's just everything. Well, for those of you listening in, we are planning, and we're not exactly sure how this is going to work, but we just had the idea, and we just, Beth and I have to work it out, but we definitely want to make you guys aware of these things that have to do with the biomechanics of playing trumpet or playing whatever instrument you may be playing if you're not a trumpet player listening to this. And we're going to work out maybe a series of some sort where Beth comes on and just shares something that has to do with musicianship and biomechanics. And so I don't know exactly how that's going to work, but she and I are going to talk about it. And of course, we'll as soon as we have it and we publish something, obviously, you'll know it because you'll see it on your iPhone or your Samsung Galaxy because you have subscribed to the podcast. As a good podcast listener, you should have subscribed by now. And so you'll see it pop up on your iPhone. So that is something that is in the works, and Beth and I are going to work that out. So Beth, we are running short on time, and I'm just going to leave you with one final question, and this is a bit philosophical.
Okay.
So you can take as much time as you need to think about your answer, and you can also take as much time as you need to answer the question. But here it is. As an achiever, as an overcomer, what is the secret to a happy and successful life, given all that you've experienced thus far?
From a personal perspective, I have to say that it comes down to my personal faith. To be truly happy and to have a successful life, I have to have a bigger perspective than just myself. I think that this is what's that experience, this whole life experience that I've had so far has taught me. I can perform on any stage that I choose. And really, my stage is just a small microcosm of this grand stage that God has planned. And all I have to do is plow my row and do my part. And as long as I'm doing that, then I'm happy.
So be good in the eyes of God and everything will work out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's having perspective. Yeah.
Perspective, be pleasing with that higher power that you acknowledge.
Absolutely.
Well, this has been just a fantastic time, and I'm so grateful that, first of all, we met on Facebook 12 years ago or 11 years ago, whatever it was, and then finally it blossomed into a actual honest-to-God voice-to-voice phone call a week ago, and now here we are recording this podcast, and I really, really appreciate you sharing your story, because I know that this is probably brings back some unpleasant memories, and but my hope, and I'm sure that your hope, is that by sharing this story, perhaps we can A, help someone avoid a similar injury, but more importantly, B, find that perspective and that balance, and realize that there's more to life than just playing trumpet. And if playing trumpet is what you do, then there's more to it than just that. There has to be a mission. There has to be a purpose behind what you're doing. What else can I say? Hopefully, we will work things out with whatever we have planned, or I guess we'll plan whatever we're going to have planned. And we'll be hearing from Beth Peruka very soon. But for now, Beth, it's been an absolute pleasure and just a real treat to follow you, and just seeing all of your posts on social media just fire me up. It's really inspiring to see you so happy and so engaged and just so full of life. And it's inspiring to me personally. So I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you very much, James. I'm really enjoyed talking with you here. It's been an honor and a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Well, this is James Newcomb, and you have been listening to the Trumpet Dynamics Podcast. Signing off. Trumpet Dynamics is produced by Beaten Path Media, LLC. Special thanks to Mike Vax for allowing use of Serenade to a Bus Seat for the show's theme music. To stay in the loop with the growing community of trumpeters who enjoy this podcast, just type trumpetdynamics.com in your browser, and you're off to the races. My name is James Newcomb, and I'm your host. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.